morning, and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church.
Good morning.
We got some rain yesterday, not quite enough, but we got some rain. Looks like it's going to be a nice week coming up, more or less. My name is Kathy Gorski. I'm this morning's representative from the church board. I have several announcements to make, and I'd also like to point you to the announcements in the order of service. Some that I'm going to mention are in more detail there, so I'm just going to summarize a few things. Now's a good time for you to greet those around you. Say hi. If you are visiting us today, we welcome you warmly. There's a variety of information on the table out in the foyer about church life and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to meet with you, as would representatives of the membership committee. If you are visiting us with children, it's our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they go to religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or to remain in the service. The nursery is just outside the store and across the hall if your child needs nursery care. RE classes end at 11:15, at which time you are welcome to pick your child up from the class. We always enjoy getting to know guests. If members have brought guests today and would like to introduce them, that would be a good time. Or if you have brought yourself and are comfortable doing so, stand up, give us your name, and we will welcome you.
Hi, I'm Justin, and this is my wife, Danica. Danica's been here several times. This is my first time, so hello, everybody.
Welcome. Invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Please turn your cell phones on silence mode at this time. And I hope you enjoy this morning's service. I will now make the announcements, of which there are several, including one for me, which is the longest. Today is our monthly food pantry collection. It is sponsored by the Social Action Committee. The collection is for the Oconomowoc Food Pantry. Monetary donations will be collected during the offertory. Loose cash donations go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC with the amount for the food pantry and for LCUUC noted on the memo line. Actual food contributions can be placed in the baskets out in the foyer labeled food pantry. We are taking orders today for the LCUUC t-shirts, which look like this. So there's the church logo on the front, and then a very cleverly put together list of this we believe statements on the back, like we believe in mutual trust and support, compassion, justice, etc. And if we can get 50 orders, we could have them in time for the Green Fair next week. There is a table in the social hall, so go order today. There are multiple sizes that you can choose from. If you have any questions, ask Carrie Duma or Gina Magnus. Also, as noted in the order of service, we do need mowing volunteers, and if people don't sign up, John Kuhn has said that he's going to need to start calling people. So hopefully you will go and find a sign up and volunteer to cut the grass. Not that a phone call from John is bad, but it would be helpful if we could get volunteers signed up. That would make things easier. Also, the UU orientation class that takes place every now and then is occurring next Sunday from noon to 2:30 p.m. Are you interested in learning more about Unitarian Universalism and Lake Country UU Church? New members, friends, and those thinking about joining the church are invited to this orientation class. Reverend James Hobart and LCUUC members lead a session that includes getting to know each other, sharing ongoing spiritual journeys, a brief history of Unitarian Universalism. It's all very interesting and informative, and it's important for people to get an idea of our history, governance, and programming. And they also talk about what it actually means to be a member, how to get involved, that sort of stuff. And it's a really rewarding way to spend your time, and refreshments will be served. Child care is available if you request it in advance, and there's a sign-up sheet at the welcome table in the foyer. And for more information, you can contact Chris White or Reverend Hobart, and I'm guessing that information is summarized, yes, also on the order of service. Today, April 15th, is the end of this year's official stewardship campaign. And I'm going to give the numbers, but before I do that, I want to extend a few thanks. First to Reverend Hobart for his training and guidance. And I believe that those of us who are involved in stewardship learned a lot from him this year. I also want to thank everyone on the stewardship committee for having run the campaign this year so creatively, from the informational materials that went out to the pancake breakfast kickoff, to the quotes inserted in the order of service every week, to the chalice out in the social hall that's marking how pledges are coming in, the creation of the flame to go on the chalice, et cetera, et cetera. I'd also very much like to thank those who gave their testimonials over the past several months. They were inspiring, I hope, to all of you. They were to me. And they really reminded us of what this church is and what this church can become. Given that it's the end of the campaign, we will not be having one this week, but I certainly will miss them, and I bet others of you will too. I'd also like to thank the board for having started the campaign on such a positive note, in which every single board member pledged at the sustainer level, and also for having canvassed so diligently over the past couple of months, perhaps. And also thank those others in leadership who stepped up and helped with the canvassing as well. But most of all, I wanted to thank the members and friends who have pledged to support our church or who will be doing so very shortly. Please, if you haven't returned your pledge card, get them to your canvasser or bring them to the church office as soon as possible so that we can tally up the results and have an idea of the amount of money that will determine how we set our budget for next year. If you haven't pledged yet, your canvasser will be following up with you shortly. So, now briefly the numbers. As of Friday, 56 pledges were in, which is approximately 60% of the total of members and friends who were canvassed. The amount pledged thus far comes to $127,000, which is roughly 73% of the target that we set this year. And we would really like to wrap up the stewardship campaign on a high note so that we can celebrate everyone's generosity and plan well for our future. So I encourage those of you who have not submitted your pledges yet to do so this week. Now on to the service itself. I would like to introduce our speaker, Paul Norton. Paul is a practicing Mahayana Buddhist in the tradition of the Vietnamese Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. He's one of the founding members and president of the Mindfulness Community of Milwaukee. He's also an instructor at the Mindfulness Center. He teaches a variety of classes, including mindfulness in everyday life, and has been teaching classes since 1996. He has spoken with many church, civic, and academic groups about mindfulness and about Buddhist practice. He also completed a three-month unit in clinical pastoral education at St. Luke's Hospital in 2001. He was ordained as a core member of the Order of Interbeing, which implies a special commitment to practice, in October of 1999. His ordination name is True Boundless Radiance. Paul is a pediatrician, father of two young adult children, currently practices developmental behavioral pediatrics, and Paul has been a very generous component of life at LCUUC for the past, I don't know, how many years?
Since
we've been in this building. Teaching an 11 or 12 week mindfulness class, which has brought a lot of people in from the community, and also attending, when he's not teaching that class, attending a once-a-month meditation class for, I guess, the graduates of your class. And also on an annual basis, a day of mindfulness, which actually took place just yesterday. So I welcome Paul very warmly, and the topic of your talk is how to graduate kindergarten. I knew it was something along those lines. I just didn't want to mess up the exact words. So welcome, Paul. Thank you very much. Hopefully I will not take any of your paperwork, as was done last week by the board. Thank you.
I'll make it up as I go if that happens.
Okay.
Might be better. Welcome, everyone. It is a great joy for me to be here among all you beautiful Buddhas, all you wonderful children. At all ages, we are all still children, aren't we? And the thing that I like very much about springtime, and as many of the other things about spring, is our invitation to play. So with a light heart and with an open heart, I hope we have a wonderful service today on this beautiful spring day. There is a gata in my tradition for lighting a candle, but we can use it for lighting this chalice. Respectful of countless Buddhas, we calmly light this chalice, brightening the face of the earth.
When I was a little kid, not so long ago, I had to learn a lot of things I didn't even know. How to dress myself and tie my shoes, how to jump a rope, how to smile for a picture without looking like a dope. But of all the things they taught me, my favorite of them all was a little poem hanging on the kindergarten wall. Of all you learn here, remember this the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat. Hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. And remember the seed in the little paper cup. First the root goes down and then the plant grows up. It was first, second, third grade, fourth grade too. I had to learn the big things that big kids do. To add, subtract, and multiply, and read, and write, and play. How to sit at a little uncomfortable desk for nearly half a day. But of all the things they taught me, my favorite of them all was a little poem hanging on the kindergarten wall. Of all you learn, the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat. Hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. And remember the seed in the little paper cup. First the root goes down and then the plant grows up. Now I don't worry as I look around and see an awful lot of grown-ups acting silly as can be. I know there are important things I haven't mastered yet. Still, it seems there are really important things that grown-ups soon forget. I know we'd all be better off if we would just recall the little poem hanging on the kindergarten wall. Now, you can all sing with this. It starts with a real big wind-up. Ah, you learn to remember this the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat. Hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. And remember the seed in the little paper cup. So roots goes down and then the plant grows up. Doodly, 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 doodly.
now that we're all warmed up, we'll have our opening hymn, which is number 338, I Feed the Spirit of a Child. Please stand as you're rolling in.
Can everyone hear it fine?
Yes.
I always thought that was an odd question because the people who couldn't hear fine wouldn't answer it. Good morning, children. You usually get a story here, but I'm going to do something a little bit differently. And actually, let me see if I can find my... Do you kids know anything about meditation? Meditation is a wonderful thing that was taught by the Buddha, who lived way long ago, like longer than your parents, 2,600 years ago, and many other people. And many of you have noted or have noticed how calm and peaceful the Buddha and other people are. Moving ahead 2,500 years ago, there is a person in a small village in Vietnam who grew up to be my teacher. His name is Thich Nhat Hanh, very funny sort of sounding name to American ears, but he is wonderfully good about how Americans or Westerners all think, and especially children, because children have the same sort of spirit, regardless of whether they're in Vietnam or Saudi Arabia or Kenya or Brazil. They all have that great open spirit. So I want to teach you a little meditation. It's called Pebble Meditation. And there are four parts to it. You have to breathe. You all know how to breathe? Oh, good, good. so, and I have this all written down on paper, so don't try to think too hard. It's Sunday. We're not supposed to be thinking too hard. We're not in school anymore. The first thing is, you take a pebble that you find from your environment, from your school or your garden, your home, your street, something that you found on vacation, something you found with your friends that reminds you of a flower. And then you put it in the palm of your hand. And you say to yourself as you breathe in, breathing in, I see myself as a flower. Breathing out, I feel fresh as a flower. You can always do that. You can always imagine yourself blooming as a flower. It's pretty easy on a day like today when you see them all popping out of the ground. The flowers are always there, even under the snow in January. So I don't really have a flower, but the thing that reminds me of a flower is the Buddhas. And many of you may know, at least many of your parents know, I'm not one of those kind of austere, grit your teeth, or Sikkhai Buddhas. I like the happy Buddhas. This is the happy Buddha with a nice big pot belly. He's fat and happy, and it's interesting that this Hoti is his name, he used to go around giving gifts to children out of his bag. Sounds like a nice thing for fat, jolly people to do, huh? If someone would like to pick that up, and you can pass that around if you want to take a look at it. Yeah. So you find yourself a pebble, or you can find yourself a petal of a flower. You can find yourself a little plastic flower or a tiny little medallion that reminds you of it and say, breathing in, I see myself as a flower. Breathing out, I feel fresh. Or just saying, in, flower, out, fresh. The second part of the meditation is, breathing in, I see myself as a mountain. Breathing out, I feel solid as the mountain. Sometimes we don't feel so solid, do we? We feel like we're being tugged by every little thing. We feel like our whole life is pushing us this way and that we're not very stable. But if we can sit and feel right on the earth, some of you are sitting very well with your cross-legged, you're really down on the earth, you can kind of get that connection that you're just like the mountain and you're very solid and steadfast, steady, and you can catch the energy of the earth holding you down. This is a rock from a mountain in North Carolina that a friend gave me, a very special friend. And so I keep this as my second pebble. Breathing in, I see myself as a mountain. Breathing out, I feel solid. Mountain, solid. Would someone like to take that pebble for me? Thank you. The third one is called breathing in. I see myself as still watcher. Breathing out, I reflect everything. Have you ever noticed when the water is either choppy because people are throwing it, or there's boats sailing across it, or the wind is up, and it's all choppy, you can't see anything. And yet, when the wind dies down and the water just settles, you can see the sky and the trees and yourself. Who's looked in a pond and seen themselves? It reflects perfectly. When you try to be as still as the choppy water and become still, you can reflect everything around you. You can be a true friend, a true child to your parents, a true citizen on the planet. Breathing in, I see myself as still water. Breathing out, I reflect everything. Thank you. Hoti made his trip around there for him. This is a stone from a stream where most of my family lives, which is in New Jersey. Yes, New Jersey has streams. How about that? And it's all smooth and worn by the waters flowing over it. So. And the fourth part is breathing in, I see myself as space. Really? really, you are connected to everything. Everything around you. There is a little planet on the outside of a galaxy that's like 10,000 galaxies away from you. Little planet, and you're connected to that. You're connected to everything. We all know this by the laws of physics, that everything is that way. And so if you're getting a pebble that wanted to say, what makes you feel free and what makes you connected with space, that's what you can do. So I have a guitar tip as my fourth pebble. Because when I feel free, when I want to connect with space, I take out my guitar and play. Breathing in, I see myself as space. Breathing out, I feel free. And you may have something like that in your life. Maybe you do play a musical instrument. Or maybe you like to work in the garden. Or maybe you do gymnastics or Tai Chi. Or maybe there's a special poem or book that you like. Or maybe there's a special place that you go that makes you feel free. You can get a little handle on all of that. Breathing in, I see myself as space. Breathing out, I feel free. So, when I want to do my pebble meditation, I go, flower, fresh, and I feel better already. I feel more open and awake and alert. And then I take my next pebble and say, mountain, solid. And I feel like the world is caring for me, that the planet is connected to me, that I am happy with all of these great Buddhas and children around me. And then I take my third pebble and say, water reflecting. And I know that the best way for me to be a good friend, a good doctor, a good parent, a good citizen, a good member of my community is to be still water, to allow everything to settle. You know, the water always goes to the lowest place. It goes wherever the earth will hold it. Water reflecting. And then I take my guitar pick and want to feel free. I say, space free. Flower, fresh, mountain, solid. Water, reflecting, space free. So I take them. I keep them in my car actually a lot. Because if I'm stopping by in a park, it's a good place to do this. And these aren't the thing, and for people who have seen me do this one before, they say, those aren't the pebbles he had before. Yeah, I changed them around. And you can too. So I have a little handout on that. You can read about the pebble meditation. And for those who want, you can get your own bag, and you can collect a pebble in your yard, at the seashore, on vacation in your school. Don't steal it from your sister. Pick out whatever you like, and you can have this little reminder. Sometimes I don't even have to sit and do the meditation. I just know that I have this with me. It gives me the strength to know that the earth takes care of me, and that for that moment I can really be a child. Thank you all for your kind attention this morning.
So, like a child who's going to take the lantern to RE, come forward. And you can lead the way, and the rest of the children can follow. time in our service that we share our deepest concerns and greatest joys with each other in spiritual community. If you'd like to share, please raise your hand. The usher will bring you a microphone. Please tell us your first name and then briefly state the joy or concern that you'd like to share. And I'll light a candle to represent that joy or prayer that we can hold in our thoughts and prayers for you. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys multiplied. I'll light our memorial candle to symbolize the light that each of us holds in our heart and intentionally uses to create a better world.
My name is Kathy, and I have a joy to share. Last week, I mentioned a concern about the health of my mother-in-law, and there were just a lot of things going on. We weren't sure what was going to happen. Excuse me. Since then, in the space of a week, she's entered a nursing home where she'll be living, and she seems very happy, and it's just amazing. We feel really good about how things have turned out, so we're all very pleased by that.
Hi, I'm Joanne, and another candle of joy for a friend of the church, Tracy Langan. We've had a couple of concerns for her in the last 3 months, but a great joy for her. Yesterday she moved in to an apartment in Lake Mills, and this has been something she's dreamed of doing for several years, so we're happy for this new start for her.
Hi, I'm Barb. A very simple joy. I was able to go visit my two sisters and their families this week, and just to live in Indiana and just to spend time with them was such a special gift for all of us.
Hi, I'm also Barbara, and I also have a joy to share. Quite a while ago, I was speaking about my sister's cancer having come back so aggressively, and it is in all parts of her body, but they seem to have found something that has stopped it from growing anymore. The liver isn't growing, the cancer in the liver isn't growing right now, and I guess everything else in her bones and in her lungs seems to be at a standstill, so that's a great joy. Thank you.
I'm Karen. A candle of concern for a friend of mine at work, Fatima, and her husband Russ. He's got some cancer that's pretty far along, and they're going to be going through a lot.
Hi, I'm John. A candle of, well, two candles of concern. One for my nephew Jake, who's been fighting serious addiction problems and having trouble finding his way in the world and maybe facing some jail time now, and for his family, and a candle of concern for my nephew Matthew, who's in Pakistan and he's doing work there to help monitor some of the money we have go there, and he's recovering from typhoid fever, and he just finds it a rather isolated place for Americans at the moment.
Candle of joy and gratitude for yesterday. I'll start crying because you know that's what I do. Just want to thank Paul for a magnificent day and whoever brought us the treasure of that glorious weather, looking at the flowering plants and trees, listening to Paul, everything was perfect, and for his presence here today, I also express a huge amount of gratitude. Thank you.
And I'll light our last candle for the joys and concerns that we keep in our hearts.
A meditation in keeping with today's theme given to us by the Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh. Breathing in, I see myself as a 5-year-old child, alive, vibrant, and vulnerable. Breathing out, I smile to myself as a 5-year-old child. In, self as 5-year-old. Out, smiling. Breathing in, I see my parents as 5-year-old children, alive, vibrant, and vulnerable. Breathing out, I smile to my parents as 5-year-old children. In, parents as 5-year-olds. Out, smiling. Breathing in, I see my good friend as a 5-year-old child, alive, vibrant, and vulnerable. Breathing out, I smile to my good friend as a 5-year-old child. In, friend as 5-year-old. Out, smiling. Breathing in, I see my difficult person as a 5-year-old child, alive, vibrant, and vulnerable. Breathing out, I smile with the eyes of compassion to my difficult person as a 5-year-old. In, difficult person as 5-year-old. Out, smiling. Breathing in, I see everyone in this room, everyone gathered here today as 5-year-old children, alive, vibrant, and vulnerable. Breathing out, I smile with joy to this wondrous kindergarten class assembled here today. In, congregation as 5-year-olds. Out, smiling.
Filled with loving kindness. Thank you.
to read one of my favorite poems. And it's especially keen in the spring. There's a line in the poem about how everything is dead and yet later proves to be alive, showing us how springtime is always full of hope and life. It's called Keeping Quiet. Now, we will count to 12 and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with fires, wars with gas, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it's about. I don't know. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving, and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt the sadness of never understanding ourselves and threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us is when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Now I'll count to 12 and you keep quiet and I will go. Good morning. It's so wonderful to be here. This is second spiritual home for me. I have been teaching, and I know so many of you for so many years. It never feels like I'm visiting. It feels like I'm part of this, and I'm very happy to be here. After having given a few sermons, 4 or 5 over the years, finally decided to get one where I knew what I was talking about. So I'm a developmental behavioral pediatrician. And Thich Nhat Hanh is not a developmental behavioral pediatrician, as far as I can tell. So I really marvel at his ability to get to right of the crux of one of the difficult parts of our human existence and how he invented this meditation that we just did on the 5-year-old child. Because the 5-year-old child is one of those really cusps of when we start developing both joys and difficulties. Many of our problems start right there in kindergarten. So we are usually in an insulated group such as our family, and now we're stepping out into a larger world. And kindergarten is fraught with joys and concerns. The 5-year-old is just emerging from a cocoon of sorts, spreading his or her social wings in a way. This connection to the larger world is both exciting and frightening. Here is the 5-year-old child venturing into the strange new world. New joys are here, friendships, mastery, and an entry into a larger world beyond his or her imagination. New sorrows are here as well. There can be the cruel name-calling, the skinned knee, the misspelled word, all the difficulties that happen in this new world as well. And it also now not only matters what we do, it matters who is watching us do it. If you ask a 5-year-old child why they want to go to kindergarten, if they do, their answer is nearly always the same: to make new friends. It's exactly why they want to go. There's, of course, a different agenda by parents and teachers and that sort of thing, but that's what they want to do. And here's the great unfolding. Here's where it all starts. In Buddhism, we have 4 noble truths, and the first noble truth is called the truth of suffering, difficulties that arise just from us being human beings. In kindergarten, we see the intensification of this for our desire for 2 things: security and approval. It's part and parcel of human nature and part and parcel, but this is the curriculum, the true curriculum of kindergarten. We enter into the world of the search for security and approval. And we try to master it, and some of us never graduate. Sickness, disappointment, failure are always around the corner. We spend a great deal of time and energy trying to prevent minor and major slights. And so much of our energy is futile. There will always be skinned knees, missed free throws, and broken hearts. There will always be the stock that went down instead of up, the C on the test we studied all week for, and the presentation that went flat. There will always be unfairness. Our candidate will not always win. Our date will stand us up, and we will rail against our misfortune. I'm not asking for resignation or despair here, and I don't want to dampen the great energy that is the human spirit, but the difference is our attachment to this outcome. We can only do so much. When we put our blinders on and forge ahead, we miss all the great scenery. We don't smell the roses. The old adage is true. It really does matter how you play the game and not whether you win or lose. One of the great failings of our time, and perhaps this goes for other times as well, is this continued belief in ultimate security. We build protected communities, allow concealed weapons, invoke the danger of foreign terrorists, and we do a lot of things in order to be secure. We build nest eggs far beyond what we need. And many people profit financially and otherwise from our fear and the fears, and in this wonderfully free society, they are free reign to touch us where we store our nightmares. But nightmares are dreams only, though, and we can wake up from them. As we build this armor against these minor hurts, masquerading as disaster, we pay a deep price. With this armor, the good news is no one can get to us. The bad news is no one can get to us. There's a risk in playing it safe, and there's a risk in not playing it safe. This is where life is. Mary Oliver, who's sort of the poet laureate of the mindfulness class, has a wonderful poem talking about the idea of how we must give up our quest for security in order to love. It's called West Wind Number 2. You are young, so you know everything. You leap into the boat and begin rowing, but listen to me. Without fanfare, without embarrassment, without any doubt, I talk directly to your soul. Listen to me. Lift the oars from the water, let your arms rest, and your heart's little intelligence, and listen to me. There is life without love. It is not worth a bent penny or a scuffed shoe. It is not worth the body of a dead dog 9 days unburied. When you hear a mile away and still out of sight, the churn of the water as it begins to swirl and roil, fretting around the sharp rocks, when you feel the unmistakable pounding, when you feel the mist of your mouth and sense the embattlement, the long falls plunging and streaming, then row, row for your life towards it. So this is our chance, the illusion of safety and love, and this is our choice in life. And if you truly want to connect with people, you must row your boat down by the rapids. Before you went to kindergarten, most of us, security was not an issue because we lived with these powerful gods called parents. They could do everything. They had the money, they had the toys, they had the food, they had everything. We never thought they were wrong, and we never thought that they were stupid. That would happen 10 years later. And suddenly you're thrust into this other environment. There are new rules by these creatures called teachers, who vaguely remember, resemble parents, but they're not exactly like that. And there's also this new set of rules that no one explained to you called playground politics. The social web of a five-year-old is very complex, and you weren't all busy, weren't all ready to handle it. Some of us did better than others, but some of us are still there trying to keep the bullies off our back and trying to impress the little red-haired girl. And if the search for ultimate security is futile and causes us pain, consider the search for approval. One wrong glance, one misstated word, one scolding of a teacher could send us into a tailspin, and for many it still does. But consider this. I teach a lot of spiritual seekers, a lot of very, very good practitioners. Most would admit that the difficulty of knowing oneself is very difficult and full of booby traps. And slowly, with patience and diligence, we can start to blow off these clouds. We do get somewhere, and self-discovery becomes apparent. But it is hard, and it takes a lot of time, and the sands are continually shifting. So, we know that getting to know ourselves is a challenge for us, and we live with ourselves 24/7. So how can someone else, who spends a great deal less time with us and can only see external experiences of ourselves, how can anyone, including our spouses and parents, truly judge us? Only if we allow it. We are so likely to take criticism to heart. I would just like to say that advice given with good intentions may uncover our failings and it may be useful. This, I feel, is the minority of judgments that come out our way. Out of insecurity and fears, others are always slinging arrows at us. There is great fear and suffering behind these acts. We must think about how we criticize and talk about people, and we must think about the opinions that are sent our way. And of course, so much of this is just useless prattle and is built on the insecurities of those around us. The Buddha said, people with opinions just go around bothering each other. So the hidden curriculum of kindergarten is security and approval. The big curriculum, of course, is, you know, how to make a sandcastle and you know, where the Play-Doh is and all those other wonderful things that were in that song this morning. They're very important things. But the hidden curriculum is security and approval, and many of us are still struggling with that. Many of us are still in kindergarten, still dealing with these particular problems. They dominate us like great weights. So how do we graduate? How do we graduate from kindergarten? I think the task for graduating from kindergarten is letting go of ego, letting go of this protected self. All the pain associated with security and approval is related to protecting the I, or in the case of larger groups, the we. The idea of protecting our political party or our nation or our particular religion. And my practice to overcome this is to use mindfulness, and time does not permit me to say how that works, but there's probably other methods as well. And they are all useful. But I'm sure that ego is the problem. And this is part of our task to graduate, is how we do not let this ego, this discursive mind, be this great bully who is telling us that we must always search for people to prop us up. We can do that ourselves. And how we can give up our search for security, because it will never come. Our big security is to be peaceful and at ease. One of the things that is in, actually, the loving kindness things that was in the song that we'll talk about later is the third one is often considered to be the third of the four things is a thing on security. So many people traditionally over the years have chanted things such as, may I be free from danger, you know, may no harm befall me. And Jack Kornfield, who made these four verses, makes this wonderful thing called, may I be peaceful and at ease. That's security. If you are peaceful and at ease, then the harm cannot befall you. No matter what external catastrophes happen, you are always feeling in touch with your basic goodness, your true happiness, your Buddha nature. So the way that we can become more, less of an I and a we, and we can embrace our Buddha nature, the better off we will be. After all, we live. It's a good time and a good analogy in the spring. We live in a garden of Buddhas. When we talk about the Buddha, we don't talk about this guy who lived so long ago, although there was a historic Buddha. We talk about the Buddha nature that's in every single one of you. So you don't have to travel to some far distant temple. You don't have to listen to some wise person giving a Dharma talk in Thailand or Tibet. In order to see a Buddha, you just have to notice the people around you. There's one on your right, there's one on your left, and there's one sitting with you right now. So when we know that we can be part of this glorious garden, why do we want to be separate from it? Why do we want to see them as other? Why don't we want to see this garden as this big, gigantic celebration? When we give up this flawed search for security of approval, what a wonderful world it can be. We can finally, finally graduate kindergarten. And this world is best described by Thomas Merton, who in his practice was not a Buddhist practice, although it had a lot of those contemplative aspects of it. He got toward later of his life when he realized the Buddha nature in all the people around him. He made this really wonderful statement. It is a glorious destiny to be a member of the human race. Now I realize what we all are. If only they could see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time. There would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, no more greed. I suppose the big problem would be we would all fall down and worship each other. Thank you for your time.
We have some time for polylog if anyone would like to share their insights or reflections on today's service. Raise your hand and the usher will bring you a microphone.
Somebody over here.
Hi, Barb again. I'm still in kindergarten. And your words have really shed a light on something that I haven't been able to grasp on my own. I don't have much more to say than that, but thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
I'm Al, and Barb, I too have been kindergarten. It's funny how the timing of things goes, and very much appreciate your words. Starting out in a place today in kindergarten, feeling a want for appreciation, for recognition, for approval, was reflecting whether or not it was arrogant. So your I and we comes to play. I was wondering whether or not, as maybe a catalyst to change, if one is in that space, and how do you get out of it? Is it the discomfort, the pain, the frustration that can move you away from that internalizing? How do you move on from that? How do you graduate?
Well, I have about a 30-minute answer, but I'll try to make it 30 seconds. Mindfulness is what I use, and that involves paying very deep and close attention to whatever discomfort you have. And so in our particular practice, we don't move away from the difficult emotions. we actually immerse ourselves in them and really pay attention to them, get to know them, because there's great wisdom involved in your sadness, fear, regret, despair. Very great wisdom in kind of doing that. Perhaps there's another quote that I often throw into my class by Albert Einstein, which talks about how that what we can do is widen our circles of compassion. And so if you look at you being at the center, having compassion for yourself is your first task. Having compassion for the people immediately around you that you are very close to is your second task. Having compassion for people who may be not so close to you but you know is your third task. And so on until you embrace everything. That may be the best place to start. I think the best place for everyone to start is to be compassionate to themselves.
Hi, I'm Joe. And maybe you just answered this question with your last answer, but I liked your quote about people with opinions just going around. But we do want to help people, so how do we help people without being a bother? And maybe the answer is compassion.
Yeah. Well, I think that takes some courage. And one of the things that I think interferes with us trying to help people is this idea that we have to be sort of absolutely sure when we're always just taking our best guess. It's that kind of degree of uncertainty. You open your heart up and you do what things make you sort of feel good and connected with other people, whatever they are, even if they're a small thing, even if that means giving somebody a cup of coffee during the social hour after this, or allowing them to go in front of you in line at the grocery store. Anything at all can be that way. And so we tend to sort of go out with that and go with our connections and do the best we can. But I will say that a lot of people are looking for an absolute guidepost. This is the thing to do. I don't have that. I have a lot of suggestions, and everybody who is really on this path stumbles and falls all the time with those kinds of things. But whenever I think about my choices and how I might do things, I always say, what's the kindest thing to do? And actually, I realize doing the kindest thing to do may not always necessarily be the right thing to do. There are such things as idiot compassion. Idiot compassion is when you give money to the person who clearly is down and out, derelict, begging in front of the liquor store. You know, that kind of thing. So, but you do the best you can. You keep going ahead, always. And if you're waiting for someone to tap you on the shoulder and say, that's the right thing to do, do it now, and that's, you're going to be waiting a long time. Just forge ahead with whatever you can.
Hi, my name is Dave, and I have kind of a love-hate relationship with the media, I suppose. And so I heard something on the radio this weekend which kind of brings us back to the five-year-old. And it was some scientific study, which, you know, kind of makes me cringe a little bit, that once children turn 4 and a half, they're no longer cute anymore. And so, you know, which was sad. And but you know what? It sort of made me think too. Maybe it's good to kind of realize maybe what's happening, you know, developmentally and physically, and you know, have some compassion for that, or to I don't know. Just, you know, I thought I'd just bring that up. It's just sort of this disturbing notion that you know, may be part of our reality, our human reality, sort of.
How do they scientifically prove that a five-year-old's not cute?
I don't know. I don't understand the methodology of scientific
studies. They were like a cute center in somebody's brain. Oh, that looks cute. That isn't.
Very subjective, right? But you know, but we react to people based on our subjective responses.
Well, but your point, I mean, again, this study sounds a little silly to me, but the point is really true. Five-year-olds are a real new thing. Their step into the world, and even if they didn't go into kindergarten, even if they were at home, developmentally we know that that's the time when the whole social world opens to them, and it's like, oh my gosh. Like I say, it's not only that you are doing things, but now it's real important to make sure that people watch you doing things. it's not just important that you built this, you know, wonderful little tower out of Legos. You got to drag everybody in the classroom. See, I did that, and that gets to be that sort of approval type of thing that goes on. So, yeah.
I've never needed a microphone, though. My teens would say, but my name is Helen. I grew up or went to school in Texas. I was kind of laughing because Texas at that time in the 60s didn't have kindergarten. And I was kind of surprised, you know, when I went to school, because when we moved to Wisconsin, I think that my mother had said that that was one of the first places where kindergarten started. So maybe that's my concern. I never graduated from kindergarten because I didn't go.
Might be it, yeah. Don't know. Sure. Sounds like a possibility. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm Gus, and in response to something that Barb was starting to say and something that Al said a little bit more explicitly, I have found for myself, having you know, experienced some trauma as a child, being told and taught that I was worthless and, you mm-hmm. know, just a piece of shit, excuse me for using that phrase, that I found I had the power, but I had to know where to look to find my nuclear power plant to find that kind of vitality. And I found it precisely in the pain. I happen to be a big believer in Freud, and because Freud has got this wonderful suspicious view of our psyche and what goes on inside of us, and he's always suspicious that there's something underneath, some kind of denial that I haven't experienced. And I think because we're so afraid of our pain, and with good reason, that we want to somehow cover over it or just simply live in a state of denial. And I have found that's where the answers are.
Yeah.
That you have to dig down in there and just stay with it, but you've got to believe in yourself in order to do it.
I'm with 100% agreement with you that we need to acknowledge our pain. It's difficult for some people to do that, however, and one of the things, not just your own pain, but the pain of your parents, the pain of people who may have abused you, the pain of difficult people all the time, is to see them as 5-year-old children. Now, when you're an adult and you say, fly off the handle because someone, you know, said something wrong to you, you feel bad, you feel guilty. But if you see yourself as a 5-year-old child, you don't, because you know 5-year-olds will do that, because that's just what they're supposed to do. They're still learning. And if we can sometimes go back and have a great deal of compassion for ourselves, we can see ourselves as 5-year-old children. Thich Nhat Hanh, I don't have a picture of my father, but I have a picture of my mother when she was about 7 or 8. He suggested, especially if you're doing this for parents, if you've had a difficult childhood with your parents, is to actually get a picture of your father or mother when they were, you know, 5 years old or about that. So,
hi, I'm Barbara again. How does this impact those children, like, let's say, the ones that are in Syria right now, in the cities that are being bombed, that went through the concentration camps, that were 4 or 5 years old? Has any study been done? How different, what the difference is, and what has happened to those kids?
Yeah. Well, certainly they have a much different view of the world of security than other people do, don't they? And you really often do need to sort of, on an emotional level, revisit those things to resolve them. And that's really a hard thing to do, yes. Yeah. This would be our last one here if we're running up against time. So.
My name is Deb. Something you said a few minutes ago struck me.
Not on, Deb, but. Than for yourself?
Easier.
Yeah, yeah. We have met the enemy and he is us. We have that difficulty. Yes, yes, yes. So it might, in your case, or in many people's cases, it might be better for you to have compassion to people around you and then turn that on to yourself. But when you have compassion for people, here's a good exercise for you. So we're doing loving kindness today, and we've done loving kindness practice, and people are doing other kinds of compassion exercises all over the world, all right now. Everybody's doing it. And they're including all sentient beings. And guess what? You're one of them. So whether you know it or not, everybody's praying for you. And it would be kind of ungrateful for you not to take that in. Because they think you're such a cool person to say, huh, I'm not great. I don't deserve those prayers. I don't deserve that compassion. And of course you do. And you know in your heart you do. And that sometimes it takes a little while for us to go there and say, we really do get with this. The inability of us to be perfect people is something that's hard for a lot of us to give up. And again, that may go back to that idea about security and approval. If no one watch, if we're building our little Legos towers and no one's seeing it, we don't know what to do. Do we build bigger towers? Do we bring people over here? And what happens if we bring our Lego people over to see our Lego tower and now it's been knocked over? Oh my gosh. So we work real hard at that. And if we can give that up, we'll be better off. Just allow our approval to come from within. Thank you all.
Now is the time that we collect the offertory to support our spiritual community. If you're visiting today, please know that you're a welcome guest and that a contribution is not expected. There will be a monthly food pantry collection today included. The offering is given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values.
Our bodhicitta heart can extend everywhere. So this is for all beings everywhere. May they be filled with loving kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy.
Closing hymn is in the turquoise hymn book, number 1008. when our heart is in hope.
Let's remember it all days. Let's play.